Thanks for listening to 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. On today's show, we will share our recordings of the testimony at the public hearing for the proposed revised definition of Waters of the United States under the Clean Water Act, which happened recently in Kansas City, Kansas. The agency heard comments from the public both for and against the proposed rule change. On our program this hour, you will hear all sides. But first, the environmental news for the week of 3/11/19 on Eco Radio KC. My name is Philip Bauer. Democracy Now! Reports. In climate news, a new study published in the Journal of the Cryosphere found warmer temperatures have led to increased rainfall in Greenland, accelerating the melting of vast areas of ice and setting the stage for global sea level rise that could inundate coastal areas, home to hundreds of millions of people. According to Los Angeles Times, after Hurricane Harvey in 2017, NASA scientists were barred by Texas officials from flying over Houston, which was equipped with sophisticated air samplers that would have helped to identify areas where toxic releases posed a threat to human health. The area is home to thousands of oil refineries and petrochemical plants, as well as over a dozen Superfund sites. The Trump administration proposes ending endangered species protection for gray wolves in the lower 48 states. The Food and Drug Administration has confirmed that makeup products from two popular brands of cosmetics contain the carcinogenic substance asbestos. FDA test of three powdered makeup products from Claire's and one from the brand Justice tested positive for asbestos, which can cause lung disease and cancer. Last week, Alabama suffered a devastating tornado, the nation's deadliest in 6 years. A new report by the Environmental Integrity Project and Earth Justice finds that coal waste from hundreds of coal-fired plants around the country has contaminated groundwater in 39 states with unsafe amounts of toxic chemicals, in some cases the dangerous toxic substances including arsenic, lithium, and mercury have leached into local drinking water supplies.
In December 18, Environmental Protection Agency and Department of Army signed a proposed rule to provide a clear, understandable, and implementable definition of waters of the United States. With very short notice, the public was invited to Kansas City, Kansas to provide comments on the proposed definition. Before the hearings began, Sierra Club and Clean Water for All sponsored a press conference to call on the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Army to protect clean water and abandon its proposed revised water rule, the latest in the efforts to roll back critical protections and make it easier for industry to endanger our kids and communities without any accountability.
So again, thank you all, and we'd love to open it up for questions if there are any in the room.
Specifically, what language in there is the most detrimental?
John Devine, can I put you on the spot?
Tell me your name and your title.
You bet. I'm John Devine. I'm the Director of Federal Water Policy for the Natural Resources Defense Council. This proposal would eliminate protections for streams that flow only in response to rain and invite industry to ask for even greater rollbacks for streams that don't flow year-round. Those together constitute roughly 60% of the streams in the country. It would also eliminate protections for at least half of the wetlands in the country. And as you heard from all these panelists, they provide multiple functions in terms of water filtration, habitat for critters, and flood control.
So how much is actually being protected now by the federal government, not tied up in court, is going to be withdrawn? In a percentage wise, I don't know if you can talk about miles of stream or gallons of water, or how you figure that, but it's hard to figure, but what's the percentage rollback here?
It is very hard, and it's made harder by the fact that the agencies have done very little to try to quantify the impact of their own proposal. But a preliminary analysis that a media organization was able to obtain indicates that upwards of 18% of the stream miles in the country, and like I said, about more than half of the wetlands in the country would be at risk.
Do you have a sense of how much of the water in the water system that would affect?
All of it. I don't mean to be snide about that. There, because these things are so connected, because these streams are at the top of the watershed, they feed everything that flows down below. They're the capillaries of the water system, and the same is true of the wetlands. They, you know, our kids learn in elementary school the water cycle, how water moves through nature, and what the agencies are proposing is to pretend that parts of it don't exist, and to let it be destroyed willy-nilly.
Mindy Eisenberg of the Environmental Protection Agency's Headquarters Office of Water, Associate Director of EPA's Oceans, Wetlands, and Communities Division, took time to explain the proposed new definitions to waters of the United States. Basically, the 2015 rule change required the Clean Water Act to protect more streams and wetlands than it had since its inception, and the proposed new rule proposes to not protect those same waters. The new proposed definition creates six categories of regulated waters and includes 11 exemptions. The six categories include traditional navigable waters, tributaries, certain ditches, certain lakes and ponds, impoundments, and adjacent wetlands. The proposed rule specifies that if water does not meet one of the six listed categories, it will not be considered a water of the United States. This clarifies that certain other waters will also no longer be considered a water of the United States, such as in some ditches, features that are only wet during rainfall events, groundwater, stormwater control features, wastewater recycling infrastructure built in uplands, converted cropland, and waste treatment systems. Let's listen to Mindy Eisenberg.
So I'm going to speak for just a brief amount of time to give you an overview of the proposed rule, what we are proposing to be waters of the U.S., and what we would be proposing to exclude. The first category of waters that we're proposing to be waters of the U.S. are the traditional navigable waters. These are our foundational waters that are the large rivers and lakes, and tidal waters that we have historically covered under the Clean Water Act, and we are not proposing to change how we are covering them. So our next category of jurisdictional waters are tributaries. In our proposed rule, tributaries are defined as rivers and streams and other naturally occurring channels that contribute perennial or intermittent flow, either directly or indirectly, to a traditional navigable water in a typical year. And our proposed definition addresses where there may or may not be a break in the jurisdiction of the upstream portion. So a couple of key terms in our definition is with typical year. This is a new aspect in the regulatory text. And the typical year is defined as what is the normal range of precipitation over a rolling 30-year period for a particular geographic region. Another aspect of our proposal is that we would not include ephemeral streams and features in the definition of tributary. And this is a difference from how we're implementing the 2015 rule and the prior regulations, where some ephemeral streams are found to be jurisdictional, but not all. And then finally, I do want to point out that as you think about the tributary system, a tributary may flow through, say, a boulder field or through a wetland and then continue downstream. If that flow continues to be either as a perennial or an intermittent flow regime, it will continue to be covered under this definition. And even if it flows through, say, an excluded feature, as long as it maintains that flow, it will retain its jurisdictional status. So our next category is ditches. There's been a lot of confusion over how ditches are regulated under the 2015 rule as well as prior regulations. And so for added clarity, the agencies have chosen to create a new category for jurisdictional ditches. So under the proposed rule, if a ditch meets the definition of a traditional navigable water, such as the Erie Canal, it would be jurisdictional. If a ditch is constructed in a tributary that meets the definition that we're proposing here, and it has an intermittent or perennial flow, it would be jurisdictional. Or if it's constructed in an adjacent wetland and meets the conditions of a tributary, it would be jurisdictional as well. If it doesn't meet one of these three elements, it would be excluded. Our next category is lakes and ponds, and this is also a new category for Waters of the U.S. in an attempt to provide additional clarity. So we're proposing that if a lake or pond meets the definition of a traditional navigable water, it would be jurisdictional, like the Great Salt Lake. If a lake or pond contributes perennial or intermittent flow to a traditional navigable water in a typical year, either directly or indirectly through, say, another water of the U.S., it would then also be jurisdictional. And then finally, if a lake or pond is flooded by another water of the U.S. In a typical year, it would be jurisdictional as well. I do want to point out, though, that if there isn't that connection of at least an intermittent or perennial flow, it would not be a water of the U.S. So, for example, isolated lakes and ponds where there is not that surface connection, it would be excluded. So our next category is impoundments. This is a long-standing category of Waters of the U.S., and the agencies are not proposing any changes from the prior regulations. So essentially, if you dam or impound an otherwise jurisdictional water, if it's a lake or if it's a reservoir, it retains its jurisdictional status. We are soliciting comment on the utility of this category, especially as we are proposing a lakes and ponds category, so we're very interested in feedback on that concept. So our last category of jurisdictional waters is adjacent wetlands. The agencies are not proposing to change the regulatory definition of wetlands. This is a long-standing definition that the agencies use, where you're required to have the hydric soil, the hydrology, and the vegetation to first determine if it is a wetland under the Clean Water Act. And then you make the determination of whether or not it meets the definition of adjacent wetlands. So we are proposing a change in how we view adjacent wetlands. It's no longer the bordering, contiguous, or neighboring, which is under our 2015 and prior regulations. Instead, we are proposing that adjacent wetlands means the wetland either abuts another water of the U.S. or it has a direct hydrologic surface connection to a jurisdictional water in a typical year. So wetlands that are physically separated from an otherwise jurisdictional water by a road or berm or a dike or some other structure where there is no direct hydrologic surface connection would not be jurisdictional. Now we would find these wetlands adjacent if there was, say, a culvert or there's inundation or overtopping in a typical year, and that would create the direct hydrologic surface connection. But if the connection is only subsurface flow, and there's then it would not be an adjacent wetland. So I do want to point out the interstate waters has been a longstanding category in our Waters U.S. regulations, and the agencies are proposing to eliminate it as a standalone category, but rather if an interstate water meets any of the conditions of the six categories that I just talked about, then it would be found to be jurisdictional. So this means that if a stream happened to cross the border between two states but does not ultimately then flow downstream to a traditional navigable water, it would not be independently jurisdictional. And because this is a change in our approach, we are very interested in public comment on this. So now let me turn to exclusions. The agencies are proposing 11 exclusions from the definition of Waters U.S. And we recognize that there are a lot of different features out there, and so this is not intended as an exhaustive list of excluded features. But our very first one is if it's not covered by one of the six waters of the U.S., then it is out. But we also recognize that there are a lot of longstanding exclusions in our regulations as discussed in prior preambles. And so we want to make sure that we're not creating some confusion by excluding some. So, for example, groundwater has never been covered under the Clean Water Act, and so we retain that exclusion here in our regulations. On the other hand, ephemeral features and diffuse stormwater runoff are excluded, and we want to be very clear in our proposal about that exclusion. I do want to point out that we identify excluded ditches. So many roadside and agricultural ditches would be excluded from the definition of Waters U.S. And so this complements the jurisdictional ditches category. Another longstanding exclusion is the prior converted croplands. And so we retain that exclusion, and what's different here in our proposal is that for the first time we're defining what that is for purposes of the Clean Water Act. It has no bearing on USDA's programs, but we also identify when that exclusion would no longer apply under the Clean Water Act. So essentially, if a prior converted cropland is abandoned, and we talk about what abandonment means, and wetlands regrow on that land, we would first determine whether or not those wetlands meet our regulatory definition of wetland, and then we would determine whether or not it met the adjacent wetlands definition. So then finally, our waste treatment systems has also been a long-standing exclusion from Waters the U.S., and we are retaining that. But to provide greater clarity to the public about what we mean by that, we are defining it and explaining what components of a waste treatment system mean. So that hopefully we can provide for greater regulatory certainty and consistency across the country. The third section of our rule has a series of definitions. There are 15 definitions that are terms used in the exclusions and the jurisdictional waters sections, and so we strongly encourage you to take a look, see how we're defining, say, intermittent, ephemeral, typical year, and please give us some feedback on the clarity and if you have any further suggestions. So the last part of, we've had a lot of interest from folks in mapping where are jurisdictional waters and where are waters that are not jurisdictional. And unfortunately, there is no existing map of jurisdictional waters. And so we are embarking on a multi-year effort to better work with our state and tribal partners and other federal agencies to get our arms around this. So we included in this preamble a potential framework for states and tribes and other federal agencies to provide the EPA and the Army with data that we would then approve. And we solicit comment on different tools that are currently used, what information should we be thinking about to validate the accuracy of this information. So we don't have a particular time frame for completing this. It will definitely be an effort on the part of our agencies, but this is really something that we feel is needed, and certainly many stakeholders have identified this as an important thing to provide that clarity of what is a water of the U.S. and what is not.
This is Teresa Wilkie with Eco Radio KC. Dozens of people spoke during the public hearing of the revised definition of the waters of the United States. Speakers supporting the new definition included such as agricultural businesses, developers, and golf course developers. Speakers who did not support the revised rule included environmentalists, hunters, nature lovers, and public health advocates. In number, nearly as many supported the new definition as supported the existing, more protective rule. You and I will listen first to those in favor of the new rule, and we will close our program listening to speakers in favor of the need to protect our waters at any cost. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. My name is Matt Gorley, and I'm the Director of Golf Course Operations at Cobert Hills Golf Course in Manhattan, Kansas. I am a third-generation golf course superintendent and the second member of my family to oversee operations at Cobert Hills. I am a 16-year member of the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America. Golf course superintendents like myself are committed to environmental stewardship. We use science-based agronomic and environmental best management practices to keep water bodies clean.
My name is Morgan Mundell, and I serve as executive manager of the Missouri Limestone Producers Association, commonly referred to as the MLPA. The MLPA represents over 200 aggregate operations in the state of Missouri, with a total economic impact of over $1 billion in the state. MLPA members provide the foundation for Missouri construction, and about one half of all crushed stone production is used for publicly funded projects such as highways, bridges, water sewer systems, government buildings, airports that serve the general good. We support the adoption of the rule changes. The proposed changes bring forth clarity and consistency on WOTUS regulations, which the previous version did not. Missouri aggregate producers deserve clearly written rules that are reasonable and present the ability for the private sector to comply with them without undue cost or time, as these factors simply drive up the cost and delay infrastructure projects in the United States. In past years, the jurisdictional lines of the Clean Water Act and the former proposed WOTUS rule left the aggregate, agricultural, and private sectors in a gray area of not knowing what meets the definition of WOTUS and what does not. This can drive up the cost of production, drags out the permitting process, and leads to uncertainty in conducting daily operations and production. One of my members is currently working to expand an operation in Missouri, has been working for years dealing with permitting issues in WOTUS. After doing their own review and interpretation of the hydrology of the land, after having an outside environmental consultant review the planned expansion and giving the company the green light, the federal government ruled that there was a jurisdictional body of water present on the property. The water body in question was only present when it rained, and the average individual would certainly not determine that this was a navigable body of water or tributary was present on this land. The new rule will help eliminate situations like this and lead to a regulatory certainty so that private sector businesses can move forward.
Today I'm representing the Camp City Home Builders Association. The Camp City Home Builders Association membership includes about 180-30 members throughout the Camp City area, and our members are also the members of the National Association of Home Builders.
Good morning. My name is Jake Tyner, and I'm here on behalf of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber is the world's largest business federation, representing the interests of more than 3 million businesses of all sizes, sectors, and regions, as well as state and local chambers and industry associations. The Chamber appreciates the opportunity to speak today in support of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' proposal to revise the definition of waters of the United States, known as WOTUS under the Clean Water Act.
I'm John Crotty with the National Water Resources Association. On behalf of the Board of Directors and members of the National Water Resources Association, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. NWRA is a nonpartisan federation of state water resources associations and agricultural and municipal water providers dedicated to the development, conservation, and beneficial use of America's water resources. In fulfillment of this mission, our members construct and maintain diversion, conveyance, storage, and treatment facilities in areas that could be considered waters of the United States. NWRA supports the goals and the intent of the Clean Water Act. We also support the agency's recodification effort. Our members want to see an effective, predictable approach to water quality regulation.
I'm David Harwood, a senior vice president with Terracon Consultants, a 5,000-person employee-owned consulting firm headquartered here in Olathe. I'm here today in my capacity as the American Road and Transportation Builders Association Northeast Region Vice Chair. ARTBA, a 117-year-old organization based in the nation's capital, represents all sectors of the U.S. transportation construction industry, an industry that generates $5 billion in U.S. economic activity and helps sustain more than 4 million American jobs. ARTBA thanks the EPA and the Corps for holding today's hearing and issuing a revised definition for WOTUS. By ensuring most roadside ditches are not needlessly regulated as waters of the U.S., the new WOTUS definition will help us to safeguard the progress of the sorely needed project delivery. Thank you for the opportunity to present the views of our membership.
I'm Blake Roderick. I'm from Good National. I'm representing the National Waterways Conference, a trade association based in Washington, D.C. Our mission is to affect common sense policies and programs recognizing the public value of our nation's water resources and their contribution to public safety, a competitive economy, national security, environmental.
Thank you. I'm Tom Stiles, Assistant Director of Bureau of Water for the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. We find the proposed rule to be in very strong accordance with Kansas state law and Kansas water quality standard. Perennial and intermittent waters are in, ephemeral, most ditches are out, as is groundwater. I'll leave you with one bit of context. Here in the Midwest, majority of impacts on our water come from non-point source pollutants, flow and habitat alteration, what the Act would call pollution. It doesn't matter how WOTUS is defined when it comes to those impacts because there is no federal authority on non-point source nor pollution. So as we look toward where we want to assume this federal authority, we need to keep in mind what the limit is of that federal authority. We thank you for spending time here in the Midwest, and we look forward to working with you on a pragmatic rule.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment today. My name is Craig Hill. I'm a farmer from Warren County, Iowa, along with my wife and family. We raise corn, soybeans, and hogs in our operation in central Iowa. I also serve as president of the Iowa Farm Bureau. The Iowa Farm Bureau represents 156,000 farm families across the great state of Iowa. The Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in Iowa, and we're very pleased to be able to speak here today. And that's why I'm speaking here today, to support the proposal, the revised definition of waters of the U.S. under the Clean Water Act. Farmers and ranchers want clean water, and we want clear rules. We need this new common sense rule that protects water quality and gives farmers clear rules to follow. Farmers are concerned about federal rules regarding water because these rules that can govern what we do and how we do it and what we cannot do on our farm. If a water is federally regulated under the Clean Water Act, applying crop protection compounds or crop nutrients to a field may require a federal permit. Moving dirt or removing trees may also require a federal permit. Due to the possibility of large fines, it is important for farmers to be able to tell the difference between land that is jurisdictional or not under the Clean Water Act.
I'm Mark Johnson, Associate Director of Environmental Programs for the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, GCSAA in Lawrence, Kansas.
Good morning. My name is Steve Nelson. I serve as president of the Nebraska Farm Bureau Federation. I farm with my son near Axtell, Nebraska, where we raise corn, soybeans, and hybrid seed. My son represents the sixth generation of our family to farm in Kearney County, Nebraska. I'm representing testimony today on behalf of the Nebraska Farm Bureau Federation and our nearly 60,000 member families, as well as the Common Sense Coalition of Nebraska, a coalition of 30 Nebraska organizations that represent farmers, ranchers, natural resource districts, golf courses, county officials, and more. As you've already heard, and as you will likely continue to hear, the 2015 WOTUS rule was a complete and total disaster. Our coalition has said for the past 4 years, the 2015 rule was never about clean water. Rather, it was clearly focused on expanding the role of the federal government into the daily lives of farmers, ranchers, small business owners, and virtually anyone in the country who turns the earth with a shovel.
Thank you. Zach Riley on behalf of the Evil Polluters, Colorado Farm Bureau, and it's more than 23,000 members statewide. And the oldest agriculture and grassroots organization in the state. We appreciate the opportunity to submit comments to the USEA and the Army Corps of Engineers concerning the definition of the proposed revision of the waters of the U.S. We urge both the EPA and the Corps to consider carefully this rule and its revision and move quickly through the process while providing insight and clarity to the waters of the U.S. That is congruent with the determinations of the U.S. Supreme Court and the Clean Water Act, imperative that a balance be struck between federal and state management regarding any waters that are contained within the borders of each state. CFB, Colorado Farm Bureau, is in support of this proposal for the revision of the definitions of waters of the U.S. under the Clean Water Act. Many issues arose from the 2015 proposal, including the agency's ability to expand the powers of the CWA to all waters that could be potentially construed as being navigable due to some nexus or proximity to interstate bodies of water. As Colorado is the only solely headwater state in the continental U.S., it's imperative that the management of the waters be a shared task with stakeholders and states, not the typical federal government approach of hands-off management that we have experienced in Colorado. There have been attempts by agencies to end the state's authority to govern its waters and lands. Farmers and ranchers need clear rules as it pertains to the water and that which is governed by the federal government.
My name is Bonnie McGill. I have a PhD in ecosystem ecology and biogeochemistry. I am now a David H. Smith Conservation Fellow working on water quality in Iowa. My comments today are my own. In addition to Iowa, I have conducted aquatic research across the U.S. and around the world. Clearly, I love water, but it's not because I think fish are cute. It's because I grew up in Appalachia where we could not drink our well water. It's because I lived in Michigan during the Flint water crisis. It's because I've measured water in the U.S. with nitrate concentrations 3 or more times the drinking water standard. So I have 2 messages for you today. Message 1, the working poor in rural America especially rely on the Clean Water Act to restore and maintain the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of the nation's waters as a matter of protecting human health. The proposed 2017 WOTUS rule does not recognize that access to clean water is a lot easier and cheaper if you let nature do the work for you. Even small non-floodplain wetlands can provide disproportionately large benefits such as nutrient retention and water flow regulation. Message 2, regulations concerning natural resources should be based on peer-reviewed science, but the 2017 WOTUS rule is not. The 2015 rule, protecting any waterway with a stream bed, banks, or ordinary high water mark is much more simple. So 1, protecting headwaters is a win for human health and pocketbooks. 2, regulations on natural resources should be based on science, not the preferences of industry.
My name is Jennifer Peters. I'm the National Water Programs Director at Clean Water Action. Since our founding during the campaign to pass the landmark Clean Water Act in 1972, Clean Water Action has worked to win strong health and environmental protections. Our core approach is to put drinking water first, which means ensuring impacts to drinking water sources are a primary consideration for decision makers as they weigh policy options to control pollution. Clean Water Action strongly opposes the administration's proposal because it puts drinking water last. Gutting Clean Water Act protections for miles of streams, for millions of miles of streams, and for over half of the nation's wetlands threatens drinking water sources for millions of people. Streams and wetlands filter pollution out of water, a critical function that reduces contaminants of concern for drinking water quality. For example, scientists have documented that small streams can remove as much as 20 to 40% of nitrogen, keeping it from reaching larger water bodies downstream. and so-called isolated wetlands lacking a direct surface connection to other waters function as sinks that capture phosphorus and other nutrients. This nutrient removal function of streams and wetlands is critical in the face of serious public health concerns over toxic algal blooms that can contaminate drinking water sources. Drinking water systems often bear the burden of cleaning up polluted source waters in order to comply with the Safe Drinking Water Act. Yet putting the burden on downstream drinking water users is not an equitable solution to ensure water quality. Downstream drinking water users should not have to pay higher treatment costs to solve problems that could be addressed by maintaining and enforcing long-standing Clean Water Act protections for streams and wetlands. While all of us benefit when we prioritize safeguarding our drinking water sources, only a handful of industries will benefit from a free pass to pollute more streams and wetlands. Protecting streams and wetlands protects drinking water, eases the burden of pollution, and reduces treatment costs for communities. Proposing to eliminate pollution protections that have been in place for decades is a significant government action that deserves significant public scrutiny. Because these unprecedented rollbacks completely undermine the Clean Water Act's fundamental goal to restore and maintain the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of the nation's waters, the agency should withdraw this.
Hello, my name is George Cunningham, and I'm here today representing the 3,200 members of the Nebraska chapter of the Sierra Club and the 600 members of the Nebraska Wildlife Federation. Today, thanks to the greatest piece of environmental legislation this country ever passed, the Clean Water Act, the last remnants of this once vast interconnected network of depressional wetlands, vernal pools, small ephemeral and intermittent streams are partially protected. One must remember that the overarching goal of the Clean Water Act is to restore and maintain the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of the nation's water. The road to achieving this goal has required and will continue to require the best scientific data, sufficient financial resources, and the unending commitment on the part of the federal government in concert with the states to recognize that all waters are connected in one way or another and that all waters are indeed waters of the United States. Unbelievably, the science behind the foundation of the Clean Water Act, as well as the science assessment of the Clean Water Rule of 2015, has been completely ignored under their current proposed rules. If such a rule were adopted by the EPA, nothing short of a major dismantling of the Clean Water Act would occur. Those rich ecological habitats that you once played in as young, they will disappear. Moreover, the effects of this proposed rule would devastate the habitats of nearly all amphibians, severely impact migratory birds, and wipe out protections for a huge percentage of headwater streams. For these and many other reasons, I and the organizations I represent vehemently oppose the critical analysis of the proposed rule reveals a complete ignorance of the last 50 years of scientific data for about connectedness of all waters of the U.S. Thank you.
My name is Addison Banks, and I'm the Land Trust Coordinator for Heartland Conservation Alliance, a local coalition of more than 40 organizations that work together to protect nature for the community. We focus on restoring the Blue River. The Blue River's waters begin in southern Johnson County, Kansas, and run northeast into Missouri through the heart of Kansas City before feeding into the Missouri River. It is a relatively small watershed. It ignores state boundaries. It has been degraded by pollution, and it has been degraded by the loss of most of its small headwater streams, the likes of which the Clean Water Rule would protect. There are thousands of watersheds like it in the United States. However, the Blue River is also an EPA-designated urban water site. Only 19 waters in the nation have this EPA designation. Under the urban waters pattern, many organizations have come together locally to renew the blue, and in so doing, revitalize our community's health and vitality. We have found it's exponentially more expensive to clean up a degraded river than to just keep the river clean in the first place.
Good morning. I am Philip Bean, an Assistant Attorney General in the Office of New York Attorney General Letitia James. The subject of today's hearing is of great importance to public health and the environment. Yet the agencies have limited oral comments to 3 minutes in one public hearing at one location in this country. This stifles participation and ill serves the rulemaking process. Attorney General James strongly opposes the agency's proposal and is leading a coalition of states that also oppose this Dirty Water Rule. Replacing the Clean Water Rule would reverse vital progress made in safeguarding our water by sharply reducing the number of water bodies protected by the Federal Clean Water Act. While the agencies claim they cannot quantify reductions in covered waters, their own internal documents show that as much as 51% of wetlands across the country would be excluded, along with 18% of streams. New York relies on the Clean Water Act. It receives water pollution and floodwaters from sources outside its borders over which it lacks jurisdiction. The act prevents those sources from polluting the state's waters and eroding the health, safety, environmental, and economic benefits those waters provide. This proposal flies in the face of the facts and is not consistent with the law. Robust scientific evidence shows the importance of wetlands, floodplains, riparian areas, and tributaries both to protect water quality and to control flooding of larger downstream waters. In excluding so many of these waters, the agencies ignore their own previous scientific findings underlying the Clean Water Rule.
Christopher McVoy, Lake Worth, Florida.
My name is Amy Roberts, and I'm a registered nurse with the Kansas City, Missouri Health Department and a member of the Alliance of Nurses for Health Environments. As a public health nurse, I'm concerned with the proposed action by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to revise the definition of the waters of the United States will result in a weakening of critical protections needed to ensure the safety of drinking water sources for millions of people. Clean water is one of the greatest public health advances of the 20th century. More than 5 million people worldwide die every year from contaminated drinking water. Contaminants in water have innumerable health effects, ranging from diarrheal illness to brain damage, hormonal and immune dysfunction to cancer. The Clean Water Act and the Clean Water Rule were designed to protect our water quality and maintain the health of our residents. Kansas City gets its water from the Missouri River and the multiple rivers and streams that flow into it. We currently struggle with contamination from agricultural, industrialization, flooding, and combined sewer overflow. Already we have contamination warnings on the rivers and streams we fish in. Mercury, lead, PCBs, and chlordane contaminate our rivers and streams.
My farm ground in western Kansas lies within 40 miles of a Superfund site that is leaking chromium into the substances underground. We can't see it, but it's there. So please, polluters pollute, that's what they do. Can they be stopped? That's up to you.
My name is Lester Thompson, Jr. I am the tribal chairman of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe located in the state of South Dakota. The Winters Doctrine is a Supreme Court ruling that from 1908 that addressed water and water rights of tribes. One of the things that the EPA continues to ignore is that doctrine. In the doctrine, it states, it is essential and necessary that all the waters of the river flow down the channel uninterrupted, undiminished in quantity, undeteriorated in quality. Those words actually supersede the EPA and a lot of your rules. Now, under your proposed new rules, there are several issues that come up pertaining to tribes. Number one is jurisdiction and jurisdictional enforcement. Number two, you're going to further open up for pollutants of big industry. In the Dakota area or territories of North Dakota and South Dakota in recent years, we have had big industry come in and starting to cause pollution within our territory. Number one, the Bakken oil fields. The fracking waters and wastewaters have continuously leaked and are starting to find its way into the Missouri River. Number two, you have the Dakota Access Pipeline. It isn't about when it's or if it's going to leak, it's when it's going to leak, and it's going to leak into the Missouri River, which is going to cause a major, major problem for our whole area that's actually reliant on that river for drinking water, agricultural uses. I am here to say that Crow Creek Sioux Tribe stands firmly against any further changes, but actually would just like to see more stringent changes if you're going to push anything instead of being relaxed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for this opportunity to provide comment on behalf of the Kansas River. My name is Dawn Buehler. I am the Kansas River Keeper with Friends of the Kaw, a nonprofit that works to protect and preserve the Kansas River. In the entire state, there are more than 134,000 miles of streams and rivers, of which 110,000 are intermittent and will no longer be covered under this new rule. This proposed rule comes at a time when the nation's waters are already impaired. Close to 70% of the waters assessed by EPA are currently classified as threatened or impaired. The Kansas River is already impaired for total phosphorus for all 173 miles and E. coli for much of its length. There is clear scientific evidence of the importance of holistic watershed health and its benefits to the ecosystem and our drinking water supply. The science shows that wetlands provide a critical role and benefit by acting as kidneys that improve water quality, by managing hydrology, reducing flood damage, and providing economic value to our communities. The proposed rule will leave geographically isolated and biologically connected parts of the watershed unprotected. This includes intermittent streams that provide critical habitat to support diverse aquatic and vertebrate communities. Federal regulations play an important role in the protection of our natural resources, in particular our nation's water. When are we going to make our entire watershed a priority?
My name is Richard Mabian, and I'm the president of the Kansas City, Kansas NAACP. And I'm here to speak for the voiceless folks that I serve. According to a recent report by the American Public Media and NPR, there is another growing crisis across this nation. Can you imagine having no running water at all? For months, Reverend Felicia Campbell, who is partially blind and lives in a fixed income, she was living without running water. Like a growing number of Americans, this 63-year-old Chicago resident couldn't afford to pay her rising $5,000 water bill. When utilities have to remove more pollution, the cost of tap water rises. The families who can least afford it often have the highest water bills. The last thing we need is higher water bills due to increased water treatment costs.
Now the calendar events for the week 3/11/19. 2019 Wealth Day at the Capitol in Topeka, Kansans advocate for water, energy, air, land, transportation, and health in Kansas, March 12, 2019. Full day event. Go to climateandenergy.org. Also on 3/12, Kansas chapter of Sierra Club invites everyone to attend a Kansas State Legislative Update presented by Kansas Sierra Club Zach Pistora. Zach will start at 7 p.m. in the downstairs social hall at UCC Colonial Church in Prairie Village, Kansas, 7039 Mission Road, Prairie Village, Kansas. Check out details at kansassierraclub.org. KCMO Environmental Management Commission meets March 13th, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Kansas-Missouri Health Department, 2400 Troost, Suite 4600. The meetings are open to the general public. 314 at 1230 on KKFI, listen to Making Contact, People Protecting People and Water in Mexico City. Clean, fresh water is one of our most precious natural resources. 316, Alex George Wetland Restoration, hosted by Heartland Conservation Alliance and Jackson County Parks and Rec, 1 to 4 p.m. Alex George Park, 10700 Blue River Road, Kansas City, Missouri. Come learn about the incredible wetlands while working to transform Alex George Lake into one. Bring a water bottle and wear appropriate clothing. Snacks and warm drinks available. Call Heartland Park or Heartland Conservation Alliance at 816-545-9971 if you have any questions or concerns. March 16th, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., meet up at Nature Connected Community Gathering to learn about aquaponics, Enviro Tips, and local environmental organization and businesses at the Anita B. Gorman Conservation Discovery Center, 4750 Troost Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. Open to ages 14 and older. For more information, contact Sammy at resilientactivist.org. The Missouri Department of Conservation is offering two Build a Bluebird House workshops to help residents attract more bluebirds to the Kansas City area. The workshops are open to adults and children 10 and up, accompanied by an adult, from 10:30 to 11:30 and 12:30 to 1:30 on Saturday, March 16th, at the Anita B. Gorman Conservation Discovery Center, 4750 Troost Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. Registration is required. For more information, call 816-759-7300 or email discoverycenter@mdc.mo.gov.